morning, and welcome back to your morning conversation here on KXCV KRNW. I'm Jeremy Werner. Joining me this morning is former Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. His final day as the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University was June 30th, and he now joins me in studio to talk about his time here in Maryville. And I think I guess if we start at the beginning, I don't want to date you by saying whatever year it was, but, you know, the thing I always see is born and raised in Flint, Michigan. And, you know, I guess my first question is, you know, starting at the beginning is what kind of things in that early part of your life influenced you as of now? Because I think most people, when they think Flint, they think of the water crisis, the turmoil involving GM. What are some of the takeaways from your childhood in Flint?
Well, growing up in Flint, Michigan was pretty magical, to be honest with you. Had a great set of friends. Our parents really set the stage for us in terms of the importance of education, of hard work, and really in enjoying life. The bottom line is, you know, I was working two and three jobs as I was growing up. Worked in a grocery store for a catering business, newspaper route. And that really set the stage for knowing that you really do need to work and work hard, but give back to your community. And we certainly did that through volunteerism efforts in Flint. That set the stage along with the integrity, the values, the morals that your parents instill within you, and again, uplifting education.
How often do you visit back home?
Get back to Michigan. It's kind of funny. What is back home now, right? Because once you leave when you're in your 20s and now leaving Maryville after 36 years, I think this really is home. Honestly, we were talking recently about the area codes 64468. We've had our four kids here in Maryville, and we've certainly celebrated much of our marriage, Denise and I, with so many people around these parts, that bottom line is this is home. But we get back to Michigan a couple times a year, and still some family, still some friends there. Stay in touch with my professors at Central Michigan University, for example.
Is Denise from Michigan as well?
She is, yes.
What, Flint?
She's from the Saginaw area, small town, St. Charles. So coming here to Maryville for her, you know, it was basically our pathway was advisor at Central Michigan University said there's a teaching job at Northwest Missouri State University. He had taught here before going to Central Michigan University. He indicated, as did the department chair, that maybe I could come here, teach for a couple of years, and then they had an opening they projected through a retirement. They could get me in the Michigan State PhD program, and that's exactly what happened. Came here, taught for a couple of years, position opened back in Michigan at Central Michigan University, and they had a slot in the Michigan State PhD program for me. And Denise and I said no, because after 2 years, we knew this place was something special. And parenthetically, I'll mention, too, that as we started here, you know, I interviewed with Fred Lamer, and we all know that he just retired a prolific 40-year career. Theo Ross with 44 prolific years. Jackie Lamer, 20 prolific years. But, you know, Fred and I interviewed in the old comm barn. Some listeners may remember that. And Wells Hall, the first day that I worked at Northwest Missouri State University was the first day that Wells Hall reopened after the fires. And it used to be the library, and then it became then the Department of Mass Communications. So pretty good history. We knew something was special, and we stayed.
And so what did you start out teaching?
So I was really on the radio side, and focused there along with, you know, introduction to mass media, theories of mass communication, senior seminar, and the like. And taught for 14 years, was a department chair, did some other administrative, KDLX back then, not KZLX, but KDLX. I was the advisor. I had an incredible, incredible set of students. They were just awesome, still are awesome. Many, many, many still stay in touch, and they're just beautiful people who help out their communities. It's very, very special. But we also, I directed freshman seminar, and then did some other administrative duties before becoming associate provost, and then left and started my own consulting business for about a decade.
It to me, it sounds like the first, you know, half your life, at least before becoming president in 2009 at Northwest, it sounds like you kind of just keep moving up and up and up wherever you are. Would you say that is more your own kind of personal efforts and striving to those, or is this just kind of happenstance of this became open, I was just in the right place at the right time?
I don't know that I ever looked at anything like, you know, go to the next level, strive to go up, but rather look for positions that offer opportunities, challenges, growth opportunities for sure, and something that I could give and make that position better, that place better. So wasn't so much wanting to rise, but rather find the right position. Sometimes you have to be in the right place at the right time. Other times you see an opening and say, that seems pretty interesting. Let's try to go for that.
So how did you know you wanted to do teaching and work in education? I had asked this previously of the new superintendent of Maryville, our two school district, because it's one of those things where my mind's not programmed to be an educator, but, you know, some people, their brains are. What is it about, you know, your internal workings to where you really enjoy this?
I was blessed. You know, my mother really was kind of a home tutor for me, and so she taught me the value of teaching, and my father in different ways as well, but also had some incredible elementary, grade school, high school teachers, and then certainly into the college era. And honestly, developed very strong and close bonds with many of those teachers, watched their craft, respected them immensely, and some of the administrative leaders as well. And so you see all that, you get to the university life, Central Michigan University in my case, and all of a sudden you're doing undergraduate teaching assistantships, graduate teaching assistantships. And now you're leading classes and you're wondering, wow, this is pretty neat. I think I'm okay at it, pretty good at it. And ultimately, when you go back for your PhD, you understand that, gosh, that's something that, you know, I can continue on in. And that's what happened for me.
And, you know, on that same kind of token, the field you're, you know, kind of taught in was mass media. What was it that stuck out about mass media? You know, it's something I've been asked before, and I'm just always like, I don't know. I just came to college and it clicked. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, I think early on, I was taken by radio specifically, but media in general and its influence. Back in the day, many, many decades ago, you could tell that media was shaping life and having an influence, and that intrigued me. I also was intrigued about radio programming. I became a program director for a commercial radio station and led stations and so on. And, you know, I really understood the importance of working overnight shifts, of leading, of being a news director, of being a program director, but also being a station manager. So I learned a lot of leadership skills, but I also understood that media was a pretty interesting business.
Would you say that leadership is something that kind of transcends the fields of, you know, we're talking education and mass media. Would you say leadership is just something that, you know, is above both of those and is something that can be implied in a lot of different avenues?
Without question. Anywhere you look, whether it be the athletic fields in terms of coaches and general managers or manufacturing, service, healthcare, you bet. Leadership, and it's not just senior leadership, by the way. I think it's leadership in general, because even if you're working in a department of one or two or five or 50, you're still needing to lead in different ways. So absolutely, leadership does transcend all fields.
And one of the things I've kind of noticed from people, at least in leadership roles, is that they're very good at recognizing talent. You know, over your years in that teaching position, did you ever just come across students you just immediately knew were going to go on to great things, even if nobody else saw it?
I'm hopeful that I looked at every student and said, there is something there, and they are going to do good things. somewhere. Might be in radio, television, might not be in broadcasting, and you know, might be in some other field. But you really looked at the quality, the content, the character of the individuals, and you knew that something was there. So I try to do that for all students, I really believe. And there are some that you kind of knew, they're probably going to end up in this field and probably going to be doing pretty well. And in fact, staying in touch with a few today, I can name them by name, and that they're doing quite well. But many others have gone into different fields, and they stay in touch. Or even those that don't stay in touch, I kind of watch where they're all at. Very, very proud for having some very small part to their development.
Okay. The one thing that, and I couldn't find too much of this in my research, but you left Northwest in 01, correct?
Correct.
And so what was happening in Jasinski's life from 01 to 09?
Yeah. And I want to go back real quick.
Okay.
I just mentioned my time in Wells Hall was honestly one of the best eras of my life. We had some incredible faculty and staff. I was able to work with the crew at KXCV, but advising KDLX was pretty darn special because it really did create a special bond. We won the Marconi Award, top college radio station in the nation. I think we finished second and then third a couple of years thereafter. And so we were really truly national champions in the early 90s, and that really set the stage for setting the bar higher in terms of what we expect in any ways in this department in Wells Hall. And we see the fruits of that today. I really believe that in 2022, as you look around Wells Hall, it's different. Of course, the industry is different, and that's the way it should be. 2001, decided to go out and put my shingle up as a consultant, and I was working with a host of organizations on organizational development. I was asked to do a faculty sabbatical out in Gaithersburg, Maryland for the National Institute of Standards and Technology, the Malcolm Butler's National Quality Award in 94-95. And we set the stage for the nation's premier public-private partnership program, a presidential award, presidential-based award for the nation's highest honor for excellence in organizations. In all my work with Baldrige, and really that has continued over the last three decades, really across four decades, it was apparent to me that organizations of all types, manufacturing, service, healthcare, nonprofit, K-12, higher ed, had a lot of the same similarities. Some basic differences, but at the end of the day, how you run them, how you strive for performance excellence, had a lot of similarities across the organizations. That took me into consulting. So in 2001, organizations were calling me and asking me to come share the story of what we were doing because I was leading the efforts at Northwest Missouri State. And I ended up going on the road quite a bit and realized I had to probably walk away from Northwest and do my own consulting. So I did that for many, many years, worked with a variety of organizations, doing some pretty exciting things at those organizations. And again, stay in touch with those people. And I think that's really important, too, that they weren't just customers or clients. They really, truly were partners and lifelong friends. And we built some bonds. And there's a theme in all of this of relationships, right? Relationships with faculty in Wells Hall and across the campus of Northwest. Relationships with students that really are lifelong in nature and watching them grow as professionals and really in their personal lives. Relationships as a consultant with your partners across the country. And that all set the stage then for going back to Michigan for a chief academic chief officer position for a couple of years, and then bam, all of a sudden the presidency opens up in Northwest Missouri State University. And July 1, 2009, we start as the 10th president and first lady of Northwest Missouri State University.
Now, did you hear about the opening, or were you approached about it?
Kind of both. I knew it was on the horizon, but I was approached by it and very happy with what I was doing in Michigan and really had continued consulting, so really wasn't looking necessarily, but you know, my family was still here. We'd been raising our children, our four kids here, Matt, Joe, Leah, and Lucas. And We said, you know, let's throw our hat in the ring.
And what was the process like behind that? Was it like a series of interviews or?
Yeah, I think it was a fairly typical search process, a series of interviews and, you know, over a couple of month period and so on. Finally got selected in May of 2009, and, you know, we transitioned in July 1 pretty rapidly, went through an inauguration process in late October of 2009, and, you know, you look back and you say, wow, we've been blessed as a family with, you know, a lot of ability to impact the city of Maryville, hopefully for the better, the region, the university, but it's through an incredible amount of relationships.
And so what was the state of Northwest like when you signed on in 2009?
Well, I'm so thankful. If you look back at President Hubbard, who was the ninth president, but of course before him, President Owens and President Foster before him, and then Jones and then Lampkin, and then all the way back to, you know, 1905, the nine preceding presidents all had an incredible amount of ability, I guess. Maybe I should say it that way. They just had a great ability to look at present day, the future, and deal with a lot. You know, Northwest Missouri State University is 4 hours from our state capital. There's several capitals closer than Jefferson City. So dating back to 1905, we really had to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps and use duct tape and, you know, get through a lot of issues, right? And so those nine presidents set the stage for 2009, and there was just a lot of infrastructure that was in place. That being said, recession, we were on the financial watch list, and, you know, we had some opportunities. But every leader has opportunities that they inherit, so that's not any different than in any business at all. But when you're coming out of a recession back then and you're on the financial watch list, you've got some work to do. And we did it, and, you know, I think one of the mantras has been don't dive for cover, act. You know that you're not going to please every single person with making decisions, but act in the best interests of the university and focus on student success, every student, every day.
And with the transition that was taking place, what is that like between presidents of university? What's the transition like? I mentioned this with Superintendent Lightfoot, but I just have in my mind what, you know, happens when the U.S. switches presidents. Did Hubbard leave a little note or take all the J's off the keyboards?
Right,
or
right. No, like we met, Mrs. J and I met with Dr. and Mrs. Hubbard. Mrs. Hubbard showed Mrs. J through the house, the Gaunt house. But, you know, Dr. Hubbard met with me. We talked about what was in place at the university. The good news is I was very familiar with the university. I'd even done some consulting after I left. So, you know, I kind of knew of the university. So the transition, I would say, was not that extensive because it didn't probably need to be at the time.
So did you continue on any of former President Hubbard's projects or any of his ideas?
Absolutely.
That he had?
You know, I think there's a thread through all this. And again, each president creates their own journey, if you will, but you take those threads of that journey, maybe not in the exact same notebook manner, but you create their threads. You know, President Hubbard's culture of quality that he put in play back, starting back in the 80s, essentially, and he asked me to be part of that in the 80s and then into the 90s and so on. That culture of quality has so many subcomponents to it that we carried on many of those, modified them for the present-day conditions, morphed them, made sure that they continued to mature.
So when you first hopped on, did you have a lot of ideas and plans? And if so, did the recession kind of handcuff you a bit at the beginning?
Had some ideas, maybe had some plans, but you also want to listen and learn and understand where the culture's at. You know, anytime you inherit a new job, there's always, you know, items that you need to learn about and understand and take in, analyze. And so you did all that. You do it through pretty extensive listening. And you also understand that even though you might have some plans, you may not be able to, you know, get to them in the first year or two or perhaps five in some cases, in this case, because of a lot was the recession and being on the financial watch list. But you don't abandon those. You maybe change those over years. But I think you take the long view is what you do. I knew that we had some performance that was strong, and we certainly want to uplift that. And strong academic programs and, you know, a pretty neat culture relative to the integration of student affairs and academic affairs. But you also knew that we had to improve in a variety of areas. And if you take a 5 or 10 year view to that, which is very hard in today's age, back then it was hard, but really hard today because everybody was short-term thinkers, right? And our minds are conditioned to lock in on something, then forget about it and go somewhere else. But, you know, performance in a higher ed organization like Northwest, you don't get something done and perform in a month or even a semester. It takes time. You try to accelerate it. In my case, you know, I don't think presidents can be all that patient. Other people want to be more patient, and I get it. There's a little friction, and it's natural friction. But our industry was changing in 2009, in 2014, in 2018, in 2022. And so you can't just sit back and say, oh, we'll get to that. You really need to push. And there's a great quote out there. I won't get it quite right. But an author talks about, I'd rather feel comfortable striving for better and more than feeling uncomfortable striving for less. And I think it's a beautiful quote because I really feel comfortable for trying to dial it up, to push for excellence, to better academics and student affairs and, you know, finance and athletics and all the way across the board, right, and fundraising. And, you know, that takes energy, persistence, really trying to find the end in mind and stick with it, but being agile and changing along the way. And I really believe that we did that over those 13 years.
So would you say, what would you say was your biggest accomplishment at Northwest, or, you know, maybe you don't have a biggest, maybe it's just a few. What would you say are the things that, you know, when you leave campus, whenever you do, and Maryville, the thing that you're going to go, you know what, this, or maybe just this, or, you know, however, is way better than when I took over?
I suppose KXCB, KRNW listeners, Bearcat Radio Network listeners, you know, might have a conventional wisdom. Jasinski will answer this way, right? I don't think there's really one thing that I would say that's the most important thing we did. I really believe that performance is a journey. And, you know, if you think about the flywheel effect that Jim Collins talks about in his classic book, you know, Good to Great, he talks about there's no magical issue that launches an organization forward, but rather that flywheel, that it's one action to another action to another action, taking a time out, doing something else. I think it's the consistency of doing that, and you do it through teams, people, and relationships. So I would say that, honestly, the relationships are really, really critical. Mrs. J and I, we've been involved in the community before the presidency, but certainly during the presidency and her being first lady. And so as we think about the region, the city, the university, through those relationships, one of our mission statements was to ourselves, we just want to leave the place better than we found it. And if you think about us living in a 1908 home in town, and when we left that home, it was better than when we found it. When you think about the city and what we've been able to contribute, and Mrs. J gets so much credit. I mean, you think about the Main Street Improvement Project, you know, the fountain that's been moved from the university to downtown, her work on the volunteer front across so many organizations. She's left those organizations, those places better, and I really believe that she's left the Gaunt House in an incredible shape. That's on the National Historic Register. Every president and first lady have had their own issues, and they've been able to improve it along the way. Mrs. J just took it to another level, and we were blessed to be able to do that. And finally, just the university. We are in better shape, unequivocally, than we were in 2009. There's a document out there called Performance Excellence, And we've been using it for a couple of years, but the last iteration, the most recent, was just published. And it documents enrollment, retention, graduation, and placement rates for students, student satisfaction, our focus on faculty and staff, fundraising, championship culture, and. All of those items are produced through relationships, teamwork, and a work ethic, going back to growing up in Flint, Michigan, a work ethic that, you know, you have to be persistent and strive for the best.
One of the things that I've seen, I've heard, and I've even heard you just in this interview mention a few times is fundraising. And, you know, it's something that I feel like most everyone, well, I won't speak for everyone, but I will right now, but I think most everyone can agree that, you know, the fundraising under your tenure was astronomically great. What would you say was the key to that?
Well, again, I'd go back to teamwork. There's so many, you know, people talk about Dr. J, but my goodness, much like let's talk about a quarterback in football, without an offensive line and, you know, skill position players and coaching staff and general managers and trainers, and without so many people, that doesn't happen. So first and foremost, it's everybody pulling together and going the same direction, doing that boat and rowing in the same direction. That's really important. I think setting a future vision that talks about Northwest continuing to mature from the previous 100-plus years, that we can set ourselves apart and that we need to because of the competition and the changing nature of the industry. And then you have to get some wins, some quick wins, some early wins, which we did, and then that catapults everything. But at the end of the day, I really believe that our continued focus on raising the bar and showing that this place really is deserving of donors saying, you know what, I am going to support my alma mater or that institution that I know of, Northwest Missouri State University. We have evidence of it, and it's because we have done things with integrity. We've raised the bar. We've outperformed others. We've shown that we're efficient and that we care about the taxpayer's dollar. We're the most efficient institution in the state. But also, if a donor were to give us a dollar, we're going to put that to the absolute best use. Donors do talk, and they see that happening. And we've been able to transform student lives through scholarships, and we still have a need for scholarships, by the way. But transform academics across the board and really uplift some great, great academic programs, as well as student support programs, as well as athletic programs, and the list goes on.
Well, not to sour the mood, but is there anything, you know, you felt is unaccomplished even after your tenure that you wish you had finished?
You always feel a sense of, oh, I wish we could have gotten to that. I wish we could do that. I think that's natural for anybody leaving a position. And so as I look around, you wish we were even in stronger financial position. We wish we could support our faculty and staff even more through salaries, compensation, but also benefits. And we're working towards that. I know the team will do that as I leave. You wish you could address a few more physical plant kinds of issues. You know, everybody, when you're born in 1905, you got deferred maintenance, and every organization has deferred maintenance. In our case, the state really, until recently, hadn't really stepped in for quite some time to help fill that gap. So you wish you could get to more deferred maintenance. But all those cloud one, I really believe, because you really have to focus on your strengths, the opportunities out there, know them, try not to have blind spots. And as I keep saying to everybody, you know, I will never, ever apologize for uplifting this university and saying we do good things and talking about them because they're fact-based. We have them. We know that they're facts. Our strategic plans along the way really identify all the gaps that we see. Again, sometimes you have blind spots, but, you know, enrollment's changing, and the 18-year-old enrollment is changing dramatically. And so how do you stay out in front of that and address that? Again, the fiscal plant is changing. The workforce is changing. So all those items are items that you want to continue to address. Maybe you didn't get them all ticked off. You've got them identified, and hopefully, you know, the next generation will address them as they come.
Were there any choices you made over the years that you kind of look back on now and think, I wish I had done that differently?
Sure, several. And, you know, I've said in various circles that, you know, leaders are human. Leaders make mistakes. And I'm very willing and forthright to say, yeah, I made mistakes as a leader. That being said, when you make those mistakes, you try to learn from them and not repeat them. I think looking back, the way you address a variety of items, whether it be budget cuts, personnel issues, and so on, there's always things you can improve upon. And so you learn from them, but also what's really important, at least to me, is that I can go to bed at night looking myself in the mirror, knowing that I did my absolute best, but also did it with honesty and integrity. And for me, out of anything else that we can look at, as long as I can do that and know that the focus was on students and student success, even though a decision may not excite everybody, that's what you're paid to do. That's what you're asked to do as a leader, is to make decisions and be a leader. And that's what I did, and I was able to go to bed at night and still can every night and say, you know what, did it with integrity.
What was the biggest challenge you faced during your tenure?
Well, I think the challenge probably is, as you talk with an incredible faculty and staff and know their needs and their desires, you want to be able to address those needs and desires of faculty and staff, but for a lot of reasons, not just monetarily, but for a lot of reasons, you cannot. And that's a challenge, because you understand that the work ethic of our faculty and staff is beyond compare. And I'm just so thankful for our faculty and staff. I always say that during commencements, that I'll put them against anybody, and I really will. And, you know, you just want to uplift them. It's always a challenge, because you can't quite always do that for all departments, all areas.
And, you know, transitioning now to what is going to be happening over the next several months, you'll be out of Maryville, you'll be down in Springfield with Missouri State. How are you feeling knowing, you know, that you're basically leaving your home for the past how many decades?
Yeah.
What's going through your mind on that?
The gift we received recently, 64468, with a heart around it, says everything to us, to Denise and our kids, because as our kids have been saying all along, we've been blessed. We're very lucky. We're very thankful. Hearts filled with gratitude because, you know, we've been able to grow our family here. We've been able to, again, hopefully uplift the community, the university, and the like. But also, we've been exposed to some fantastic experiences, have met some incredibly warm, caring, beautiful people. And as you look back and as you depart Maryville, you really look at that with eyes wide open, with smiling faces, with very warm hearts, because it has been flat out special, and we're very, very grateful for that experience as we transition. And we're ready to transition.
And so what will that transition be like? You know, bring, I guess for me, it's interesting to think about how we are able to have passion for something for so long, and then we have to kind of, you know, in the grand scheme of things, in an instant, change it and direct that passion towards something else. What'll be the, I mean, I'm just trying to think of how to ask, you know, what will it be like to kind of direct that passion towards something not Bearcats?
The passion is for education and helping individuals and organizations grow. So the passion really won't change. The colors might change a little bit, right? But it will be around some great people, some great leaders, and a community that wants to continue to grow. So the passion will be there, but let's make sure we state that the passion won't go away for Northwest, right? The green and white, the OAB, AAB, the gratitude towards the institution really holding a very, very special place in the Jasinski family heart. I'll tell you what, that passion doesn't go away. So the passions for education continue. I think that I'll still be working with some ASCU, American Association of State College University, organizations that are like Northwest. So that passion continues, as will the Bearcat passion.
So will Maryville be like Michigan, where it's still a home to you that you want to visit?
Absolutely. And over time, you know, like anybody else, there will be events and people that obviously will hop in the car and come back home, so to speak, and we look forward to that.
What are some of the things you're going to miss about Maryville? I was going to ask the one big thing, but I know you like spreading the love around, so I'll just say, what are the things you're going to most miss about Maryville?
Well, it's been interesting. Much like Denise and I growing in our relationship, our marriage, and then our kids growing, we've seen Maryville grow up and mature. This town is not like it was when we arrived here in 1986. That's the way it should be, by the way. We've all matured, and we're excited about it because Maryville is that very, very special place that many, many people talk about. Oh, I'm going to come there for a year or two and then leave. You know, all of a sudden you're here for, you know, some people case 5, 10, 15, 20, in our case 36 years. Special place that grows on you. And again, it goes back to the people and the relationships, the opportunities to raise your kids in a safe community. They had so many experiences to be able to, you know, partake in vast amount of activities, to you know, ride your bikes and, you know, go with your friends anywhere and everywhere. But it really comes back to seeing all the people and partaking in daily life in Maryville, going to the grocery store and, you know, being able to yuck it up with those behind the meat counter and in the produce aisle and everywhere else. Those are pretty neat opportunities.
Okay. And I guess I'd be raked over the coals if I didn't ask, do you ever see yourself coming back to Maryville again?
Well, we will come back. There's no doubt about it. We'll be here and we'll be visiting. But what the future holds for us, we're not going to map that out. We know that we're going to a place where we need to go right now, and I think we can offer something there. They can offer quite a bit to us. We're excited about that opportunity. What lies beyond that, time will tell and see, but I know one thing. We'll be helping shape and uplift the communities that we in which we live and the organizations for which we work, and that's what we'll focus on.
Okay. Well, that's all I got. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just want to say thank you to our friends at KXCV, KRNW. Over the years, from day one, I've been exposed to, well, actually, back in college, I worked for the public radio station back at Central Michigan University. So I know public broadcasting. I know national public radio. I know stations like KXCV and KRNW. But the people here and why all of you work at KXCV, KRNW, and what you do, and how you do it is very, very special. So it's just kudos to each and every one of you, because what you're providing to our listeners is a true gift. So thanks to each and every one of you and your colleagues.
Once again, that was former Northwest President Dr. John Jasinski. And this has been your morning conversation here on KXCV KRNW. I'm Jeremy Werner.